Hi there. This is the Design Your Physician Life podcast brought to you by the MaxCelerin Mastermind, a physician personal professional development program for physicians who want to learn about entrepreneurship. Today, I'll be talking about selling your medical practice. Are you ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Design Your Physician Life podcast, where you will get excited about being a physician, learn the tools that can help boost your success, and great tips from successful doctors. Join us to unlock the keys to an amazing physician life. And now, here's your host, Dr. Mirdalis Diaz-Ramirez.
Well, guys, today, as I'm recording this, marks 9 years since I sold my medical practice and 1 year since I was out of that contract. So this is an emotional last few days for me. And I want to share with you, because if you're asking yourself what you can do to sell your medical practice, which questions you have to answer, I have most of those today to answer for you. We're going to start with 10 important questions for physicians, you know, that you have to ask yourself as a physician who's looking to sell your medical practice. Some of those I asked myself, some of those I didn't necessarily just ask myself directly, but I knew the answers to them. We're also going to review some 10 important calculations and documentation that you need for the sale, and 10 important questions to ask the buyer, the person who's going to come to get your clinic, your baby. And that's one of the questions that you have to ask yourself. You know, why am I selling this practice? Is it due to retirement, for a career change, for financial reasons? In our case, it was for family reasons. It had come the time when, well, you know, it's my husband, myself, we had the practice. I'm the physician. He was in management. And the practice had grown in such a way that at times it felt like we were having shared custody of our kids. And we really wanted to have some extra time with our children and be able to succeed. The situation in that era is around 9 years ago. It was happening that ICD-10 was coming, so there were going to be some challenges with that. We had grown into two practices. We had brought in another physician. We had physical therapy, acupuncture. It was an interventional pain management practice with two locations. We had massage, pool therapy. So we had grown into a great multidisciplinary program. We were within the insurance, the restraints of insurance. So as you know, you have to add more things because the reimbursement would be coming down and then you have to be more creative. So you get all these other businesses. And it was a point in our lives personally that we really wanted to spend some more time with our kids. So we decided to sell. And that was the why. So the why was our family. And as part of the sale, what we did is that we went through different alternatives. We knew of some groups that actually I was very fortunate. We were at the time we had been designated some years ago as centers of excellence. And because of that, we had some groups call us from outside, one asking us about how we did that. The other thing was centers of excellence for the American Pain Society, as I say. And how did we achieve that? How did we run the clinic? How did you create the multidisciplinary programs? Also, we had people coming to want to purchase our clinic and people who wanted to partner with us. And, you know, we said no many times, but there was one particular group that really caught our attention and we were in negotiations with them and they were really attractive. There were some red flags with them. With anything that you're doing, you have to look for those. And the point of that negotiation was to stay with them, but there would not necessarily be any financial exchange yet at the beginning, which was a concern. Then there was a different group that was really purchasing all the clinics here around us. And the timing was such that we reached out to them. That group didn't reach out to us. Actually, they were surprised because of the success we had as a multidisciplinary pain center. And eventually we were both convinced at the time that that would be a great, great idea if we had a transaction. So One question that we should ask ourselves is that we're emotionally ready to let go of our practices. And was I at the time? I thought I was because I really wanted to be with my family. One thing in this deal was that I was going to stay behind as one of the physicians. And staying behind as one of the physicians, you see how the changes happen in the clinic. You know, you're not the one running the business anymore. So it was your clinic. Now it's not your clinic. They're not your patients any longer. And there was a lot of emotions flying there. Things happened that were different just because they have, you know, as a company, there's different intentions, right? I was recently, and I'm still reading the book, The Infinite Game from Simon Sinek. And in that book, he's talking about the companies that run, you know, for the infinite game, long-term game. And when changes happen in administration where things are run for the short-term game, when you have a sale purchased by one of these private equity groups, you have to understand that their game is a short-term game. It's not necessarily a long-term game, an infinite game. And for the short term, they're looking for acquiring practices, increasing revenue, and then preparing them for a quick sale so that they can get their investments and back and more than that. So that was the game that we entered. And I don't think I was emotionally ready for that, but we went with it and I stayed with them for like close to 8 years. So that's a question, you know, you have to understand that once you sell, then that's gone. It's not your practice anymore. One big question, more important than emotionally, really for the transaction to happen, because on the other side, the emotions are not going to be the important thing. It's going to be whatever is on the books. Is that if your practice is ready to sell, is it in a good state to sell? Is it profitable? Does it have a good reputation? In our case, yes, our case, we had a good profitable clinic and we did have a great reputation having won the not only that prize, we had won top doctor a few years in a row and we were part, we've been part of this community. I'm still in this community now in a different situation, but it was in the good reputation. One mistake that we made that, you know, I'll talk to you a little bit more in the pitfalls to avoid when you're going to sell your practice is that we were not necessarily like that ready looking to sell. So we did not do our due diligence like a long time before preparing for that. It wasn't really on our plans. It was that time that we really saw the need to spend more time with our kids. But one thing we didn't do was that to stop purchasing stuff within the last year. So if you're going to sell, if you know you're going to be selling your practice, if you want to get ready for your practice, we would recommend to stop buying things for the last year and then just getting your practice ready for that transaction. So that was that's a tip right there. We did consult a professional advisor and broker who was specializing in selling medical practices. They actually came and did our evaluation for our clinic. That's going to cost you a few thousand dollars. And they will come and that's going to be part of the due diligence. It gets you ready for the due diligence that the company who's going to purchase you will be after. So you get ready for that. They help you getting ready. They help you calculate your numbers. They tell you what values are needed to sell the practice. And we're going to go over those in a second. And we were very, very fortunate. We had a great company. It was a local company. We looked at Google, helped us look for them. We interviewed a few of them. And it would be best, obviously, if you get any of these guidance through recommendations. But in our case, we didn't have that luxury. So we went ahead and we interviewed. And we were very fortunate to get this particular company. They were great. They came. They helped us getting ready. They helped us with our numbers and they did a great job and they helped us and they take you by the hand. They give you recommendations of what to say when you're going to that room to negotiate your selling price. And I did it and I got what we really wanted. And it was in a lot of ways, thanks to that group, that broker who came and analyzed our practice. They gave us a book that made it easy for us to present to the buyer, which was a great, great asset to have. And it helped us with the couple of practices that we were talking to. It helped us decide who we're going to sell our practice to as well. One of the things is that we didn't necessarily know or have a clear understanding of the market value of our practice. We were thinking that as physicians, precisely because of having a great reputation in town, because of our program and all these things, those were going to be of value that we could sell our goodwill. And yes, you can have some of that, but at the end of the day, you know, it's going to be more for this transaction was what was on paper. So it's very important when you're selling to the private equity. Yes, it's important definitely to have a good reputation, but to them, it's going to be like if the patients are going to stay, if you're going to be able to have the same income. Obviously, that if you have a good reputation, your patients should be coming back, right? But you cannot sell the goodwill per se. Like it alone doesn't have a value. And at least that's what we found. We were advised, and that's what we've seen in a lot of research that we've had. So in terms of determining the market value of the medical practice, that's going to be a complex process once we have to understand the business. So it's important to understand our costs, our profit, how money is made. And we should also consider whether we want to not only sell the practice itself, we want to join a hospital or start our practice in a different way or join a group practice. That's all going to be part of understanding the business that we're selling. And in our case, we had the clinic for around 7 years. So we were very acquainted with the market. We were very acquainted with what we wanted to do next. We knew that I wanted to remain in the community. So that was part of the negotiation that I stayed at the clinic. And then I had a great salary, benefits, and all those things I negotiated. So then I could move to my wife, right? It was taking care of my children. So I was going to be having some freedom that my husband and myself could do that and take care of our kids. You know, they were going to middle school. We understood that those were very important ages for them. And that's what moved us to sell. In terms of the valuation techniques, there's going to be several ways to value one's company. One method is to use the standard industry multiple on your earnings. For example, if somebody was trading stocks, right, in the stock market, so for 20 times earning, then the company's value could be the last year profits times 10. That's 20 divided by 2. And that's because nobody's going to really pay the maximum. So one can cut it in half. Another method of valuation could be outcome-based. For example, if somebody can cure the condition of patient, you could ask them what it's worth for you, and that could determine the value of the practice. In our case, we did by EBITDA. And when we're selling the medical practice, the EBITDA is earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. And it's really a measure of the company's operating performance and profitability. So when we're selling the medical practice, it provided a clear picture of our profitability before the influence of any of those things, of tax environments, capital structures, any non-cash accounting estimates. So it was something that was important for us to have, and that was how we base our negotiation. If you take a look at what's considered a small EBITDA business, those are going to be those that are doing like $1 million or $2 million. They might sell by 7 times. If there's one that's larger, for example, a business that has 20 million of EBITDA might sell for 15 times that. In terms of selling a medical practice, that can vary greatly, obviously depending not only on the patient's profitability, but also the market and other factors. For example, a practice that's making $3 million a year, typical EBITDA might be $3.5 to $4 million a year. And that's going to be driving a lot of that pricing. In our case, we were, you know, it's 9 years ago. It was enough to cover our debts and more. So we were very pleased with what we had. As I said, the goodwill. Goodwill is basically an intangible asset that represents the non-physical assets that we had. We had the brand reputation, we had our customer patient relationships, and we didn't really have intellectual property. We did have programs that we ran, but they were not really of interest to this company that ultimately purchased, because they were not in the business of a multidisciplinary pain management. They were in the business of more interventional pain management. If you're in a situation where goodwill is to be used, then you have to determine that value, and that can vary greatly depending on all those factors that we just mentioned. There's going to be now some other factors to take into account. For example, we haven't really talked here about the value of AI, the impact of AI on medical practice. And with the impact of AI, that could potentially impact the value of goodwill in a medical practice, because some functions can be done, and then that can maybe reduce or change in some different ways the practice patient relationships and reputations. So that's something still to be determined, to be talked about. There's also changes in the healthcare market conditions, which, you know, the value of goodwill in a medical practice can be influenced by the broader market conditions. For example, if it's expected to improve, then you can have some improvement in the goodwill. If it's expected to decrease in some ways in your community, then that could be decreasing as well. So those are things to take into consideration in terms of, you know, the value of the practice itself. When we're selling the practice, it's important that we understand how that process works, but we want to also understand if that's the only exit strategy. We call it an exit strategy whenever you're, you know, going out of your business in a different way. And there's different strategies that you can apply. If you're developing your exit strategy, you have to really understand the reason for your exit. You know, we mentioned retirement, we mentioned career change, we mentioned desire to pursue other interests. In our case, I still wanted to be a doctor, but I also wanted to take care of my family. So that was our interest right there. The valuation we discussed, we had somebody who came and helped us with that. And then we also, when we're thinking about the exit strategy, you know, we have to prepare for selling that practice to potential buyers. And I said, you might want to update equipment, but not necessarily like on the last year. You have to make sure that everything in terms of regulation and compliance, anything like that is addressed before getting somebody, you know, to the table to discuss with them about the selling of your practice. The other thing is that at times an exit strategy can be that you're either selling the practice or passing it in some way, shape, or form to another doctor or partner. So there should be a specific plan for a smooth transition for that. And that can be like training and having the successor come and learn about the operations. If it's somebody who's there in the clinic with you already, making sure that they understand everything that you do, so that you teach them and they can be successful as they take over your practice. In terms of the financial aspects, having somebody who deals with the finances, like financial advisor who's really understanding of the tax implications and how to best manage the proceeds from the sale is going to be very important. In our case, we had our accountants. They were great at doing that, so we had them. We also had a lawyer who's been, you know, our wonderful friend forever. I think that having a great healthcare lawyer is going to be very important from the point that you're entering healthcare, you know, from the time that you're a resident, that you're going to be looking for that first job, you should engage in a relationship with an attorney who's really going to be your guidance. And healthcare attorneys are going to be great. They are familiar with these type of transactions. Some of them are within firms that they also have, you know, other, like, if, for example, if you're selling your practice and you have a building and you need a real estate attorney for that transaction, that's going to be very important. Some of these practices of law, they have different types of attorneys within their practice that are going to be useful or could be useful in a transaction like this. The other thing is that when we're getting ready to sell, as I explained to you, when we sold, we had people calling us and we also called people. Sometimes people decide, physicians in their practice decide to put the practice up for sale and, you know, market that sale. There's going to be different places where you can market that online or through different brokers. In our case, we were very fortunate. We did not need that. But you could involve listing with a broker who specializes in medical practices or directly reaching out to potential buyers. That's what we did. The brokers, they came in our case to do the valuation of our practice. They didn't come to sell our practice. So you can hire them for different aspects of the sale, either that can include from the marketing all the way to actually going there to the negotiating table and do that transaction for you. In our case, we decided to do it ourselves. And I think, you know, they actually congratulated us in what we obtained. So that was great. And they helped us for that negotiation and sale. We were able to understand the terms from both the lawyer and the broker. So they helped us with understanding that. And then with those terms, I was able to go and do the negotiation myself. We set price, we set payment terms, we set the transition period, and all those I was able to do because I had that coaching, that training from these experts. And once again, if you don't want to do this because you don't feel comfortable doing that type of having that type of conversation, then just have them do it for you. Understand that you're going to have to pay them some extra for doing that for you. But, you know, you can be successful. Maybe you even get some more if that happens. They're going to shoot for whatever you tell them that they should shoot. And obviously, they're going to advise you on that. In terms of a transition plan, there's going to be a transition plan that it will include, you know, transferring your records, informing the staff and patients, and potentially you could provide support to the new owner during that transition period. It depends on the experience of that future owner. If they have their systems, is there a big company that already has all these clinics, you know, they're going to have, okay, you know what, just leave these things to us, we'll take care of it, and then that's it. Or you might have to, you know, have part of it for you, part of it for them, or you might have to be more involved depending on who you're selling to. For example, if you're selling, as I said, to a partner or a physician who's coming out of town, then you might have to be more involved in that. But once the transaction's over, you're not the owner any longer. You should not have to be in charge of anything financial. And in terms of the marketing and of the practice and all those other topics to keep bringing patients, you know, there's going to be advantages and disadvantages when you're selling, and you have to be clear in those contracts of what the responsibilities are going to be, especially if you're staying behind in that practice. For us, they immediately became the custodians of the charts, so we didn't have to deal with that. Marketing was a little bit let's call it a gray area. We had when we saw, we already had a referral pattern, right? We had who was referring to us by numbers, by zip code, where our patients were coming from and all this stuff. And I have to confess that I thought those referral patterns were going to be better respected. When we moved into that group, they had a different idea of how the marketing and how this should happen. So those patterns changed. And I'm glad that sale happened at that time, because those patterns were going to change. And it was unexpected that they changed in that way for me. But it was a reflection of what was to come with that company coming to town, which, you know, we were able to foresee, and it was really a great sale at the time. The other thing is that, you know, once you sell, what's going to be your post-exit plan? Because if you're selling for retirement, you have to understand that retirement is quite different from being an entrepreneur. And we see it with patients who retire all the time, and they come and they have the lives that they might or might not have been prepared for. that's something that you should really take into consideration. What's your next thing? You know, how you're going to use your brain and your physical and all the things that you want to do when you retire. Starting a new venture, there you might want to consider, if you're starting a new venture, just transitioning slowly and making sure that you have maybe some income for a period of time before exiting into that new venture. And if it's something else, just having a plan for that will certainly make the transition easier. There are some other ways of leaving a medical practice. You know, you can merge with a large practice. You can have an acquisition like we had in our terms. You can have maybe pass the practice to a family member. Some people pass to their children, right? They have built these practices and now their children are happy and ready to take over after having gone through medical school and residency themselves. So that's a wonderful transition. And you can remain there as an advisor to your child, right? And or any other family member. There's some times where employees can buy your practice, especially if your employee is a physician, as I said, and that you will have to get ready in the same way, you know, valuing the practice, arranging financing, and then transitioning the ownership to the employees. Or you can have a partner buying you out, for example. Some practices are fortunate enough to be so big that they can go public. So they can do an IPO, an initial public offering. That's going to be very, very involved. There's tons of lawyers and advisors and committees that will go and prepare you for this initial public offering. If you're in that situation that you've been fortunate of building, you know, a great practice for your community and all the communities that you're serving. So you're going to have to hire underwriters and preparing thoroughly for that IPO and then launching that IPO. Unfortunately, many times, you know, let's say sometimes people are not able to really commit to any of these, either for medical reasons, personal reasons, or just not having the knowledge on how to do that, then closing the practice is an exit strategy. But still, if you're closing the practice, you will have to notify your patients, your staff, you will have to sell assets, you will have to wind up the business, you will have to, if you take insurance, you will have to notify your insurance companies, see how that affects your transition. Because, for example, I was talking to somebody recently and they were trying to close that practice and then move on to a different type of practice. And the insurances told them that they had to give them 1 year, one whole year before they could leave that practice, close that practice. So it's not as easy many times. You know, obviously if somebody's sick, cannot perform, then that's a different issue, but, you will have to really do your due diligence even for closing your practice. Some people also convert their profit practice to a non-profit practice, and that, you know, you can set up a non-profit organization. That would be wonderful if you're able to move into philanthropy in that way with your medical practice, but you will still have to transfer your assets to that new nonprofit organization, secure that nonprofit status, so that making sure that everything is clear, that is not a profit a company anymore. There's some others who have been able to franchise their medical practice. Here locally, we have, actually it's not a medical practice necessarily, it's a physical therapy practice called Physical, FYZICAL. And they started as a local office here, very close, not far from one. There are multiple states now. They partner with this guy who was the one who created Jenny Craig's, as I understand, and some Gold's Gym, I think, as I understand, if I'm not mistaken, he was involved in the creation of those two franchises. And they have been able to recreate this physical therapy practice and taking it all over the United States, which has been greatly successful. So looking into franchising your model might be another exit strategy, but in a great way. That's something to consider for those who have like this particular set of programs that are set and they have seen success and they can just implement and transfer from one clinic owner to another clinic owner. Sometimes we don't have all the knowledge to run a practice. Like we just want to be doctors, but we don't know how to do it. And we have thought that we can do it all. It's like, you know what? You know, you cannot do it all. And it's best if you have somebody else. So many times just hiring a manager with the experience will help you to run the day-to-day operations. And that way you can focus on being a physician, still supervising your manager, but retaining the ownership of your practice. Obviously, you would have to recruit that person, train them, and transition them, but you could retain your clinic without really having to, you know, to leave your business and your baby if you feel like that's what you have for a clinic. So those are exit strategies. One of the things I want to move on is to mention some of the calculations and documentation that you need for the sale. We talked about EBITDA. I have such trouble, and I'm not the only one. I'm not the only one who has problems with that word, with that acronym. But there's some other things that we need to have ready. Obviously, for that to happen, for those calculations to happen, you should have your financial statements, your profit and loss statements, your balance sheets, your cash flow statements for the past few years ready. Because these are things that they're going to ask of you. And these are things that are going to help you calculate. And if you decide to work with a broker, if you're selling your practice, then you're going to need all these things in place anyways. So might as well just get that work done ahead of time. The evaluation will come from there. It's going to be very important. Patient records, close up all those notes before you even talk to anybody. It's very important. You need to have not only your patient records completed, but you should also be working ahead and making some reports. Now that we have EHR, we can do all these. Most of us have EHR these days, electronic health records. Some of us still have paper charts. But having a count of not only, you know, like an account of all the patient records closed and notes closed, having a count of the active patients, their demographics, where they're coming from, who's referring them, all those things can be certainly important for that person who's going to come to buy your practice. The other thing that you will need is a list of the assets that you have, your medical equipment, your furniture, anything. If you have real estate, what's staying with the transaction, what would not stay, all those things need to be clearly identified. The staff records, you know, who works with you, what the roles are, what they're making, their contracts, everything needs to be clear. If there is something where you have questions, just make sure that your lawyer has seen those and has helped you with any contracts or agreements. The same thing for lease agreements. If you don't own your real estate, or if you own your real estate and you lease to your company, whatever it is, you want to have the lease agreement ready. Any contracts you have with anybody, suppliers, service providers, any partners that you might have, all those things are going to be asked of you. The other thing is like your tax returns. So the tax returns, not only from the last year, it's going to be really for the last few years, because that's the way that they're going to verify that what you're telling them is true. Insurance, whatever policies you have in place for protection of information, for, you know, all these extra insurances that we have, you should have all those ready to go, because they're going to ask you once again for those, as well as showing that you follow, that you have policies and procedures in place and how you are compliant with regulatory issues like health and safety regulations, with HIPAA, with your employers. All these things should be in place. They might not want that part necessarily because they might have their systems, but regardless of that, it's important that you always have these papers, these documents in order, because if you have an audit, then you will have to show them anyways. So that's something that your accountant, your attorney, your manager will help you gathering, putting together for that sale. There are some questions that you then will might want to ask the buyer themselves, right? When you're selling, it's like, who are you selling to? What do they want? Making sure that you do your due diligence on your part because you want to be paid. And you want to hopefully get somebody who's going to really take good care of your patients and what you've built. Regardless of what you want, you always have to understand that what you're selling is not yours any longer. It's not your patients. They're not going to be your patients even if you stay behind. They were for a period of time, and you will always cherish those experiences and celebrate those transformations that you've had with them. But right now, after you sell, not yours anymore. It's their business and everything is theirs, okay? So one question to ask whoever is coming is like, why are you interested in buying my practice? In our case, we knew what they were looking for. Not necessarily exactly, they didn't necessarily tell us of all of it. We knew that they wanted to grow. We knew that they wanted a transaction, but we didn't know that they were planning to maybe go and go to the point of being a publicly traded company. That was a little bit of a surprise, but at that point, you know, the company wasn't ours anymore. And it also was like, you know what? We're part of this big thing. So it was to some extent something like fun to be part of, into some extent, you know, being part of that growth. Another question to ask your buyer is, do you have experience in managing a medical practice? Especially, this is going to be very important if it's a much smaller scale buyer. And if they don't, you have to see how you can facilitate that knowledge, right? So that your patients are taken care of, your ex-patients are taken care of in the future. Bye. The other one is like super important. How do you plan to finance the purchase? And that was one thing that our attorneys helped us with. That was a very important way. We knew of this company, so there was no question about what the financial funds were. We were okay with it. We had seen it work with others, so we were supported by that. But it's something very important that you have to vet the other person who's going to purchase in terms of their finance, the financial capabilities. What are your plans for the practice after the purchase? In our case, we didn't really understand. We thought they were going to keep our two locations. They closed one of the locations down. And thinking back, would that have made an impact in our decision to sell? I don't think it would have at that moment. We knew exactly what we wanted for our family. And even though, you know, it's painful because you build this such a great practice, in our case, we were really into the details of how the office looks and having these services accessible to the patients. And it's hard to let go in that way. And with that, you know, employees are going to be gone as well. But we didn't know that that was going to happen. Still, we were not sure that that would have made a difference in our case. Another question is, how do you plan to ensure a smooth transition with for my patients and staff? And that question is very important in terms of what your responsibilities are going to be, right? What will you have to do to make sure that they have everything they need so that the patients are taken care of and that they don't need anything else from you? That's not going to be, you know, in the contract. So you have to make sure that everything's crystal clear. The other thing is that you can ask them if they're prepared to honor existing contracts and agreements, and that will help you with preparing the patients, right? Like, for example, if they're not going to be taking extra Y insurance, it might be that you have to notify the patients. It might be that they are going to be the ones notifying the patients, but that will also help you with your responsibilities of what to do. The other one is that if somebody is not a professional purchaser like these guys we had, where you can ask them to do the same thing. You can ask them, you know, to consult with a professional advisor or broker who specializes in buying medical practices, because that's going to help with the negotiation of the price, right? You will have two brokers who are experiencing this process, and they will be able to make things clear for both parties so that you can have a win-win situation. The same way that you have financial issues, you will have legal implications and responsibilities that will come with the purchase of a medical practice. And once again, if that person is not experienced or that the other party is not experienced in doing these type of transactions, they will want to consult an attorney, and you will want them to consult one as well to make sure that during the transaction and everything like that, you also are not going to be affected. And they don't want to be affected, right? We're doing things in good faith, so we don't want them to have issues as well when they're purchasing from you. The other thing is, like, how do you anticipate the due diligence process will take? How long do you think it will take, and how it's going to happen? Because, you know, that will affect, like, at the same time, if you're a practicing physician at that clinic, you want to be able to know how much time it's going to take for them. And it's going to really facilitate if you have all the documents, as I told you, already ready for them. They shouldn't really ask much more than that. But it might be that they might want to consult some third parties for something. So you want to ask them, hey, what's your process? What are you going to do? And then either you talk to them or their broker or their lawyer about it, or your broker or lawyer or yourself talk to them about it. The other thing is that, are you open to a seller financing arrangement if necessary? That's something that you can provide. As a seller, you can provide financing to them. And that can be important also if you have, for example, real estate involved. And if it's a building that's paid off, that would be a great way for that new person to come, especially if they are a partner or if they're like your child or some physician who graduated not too long ago, to help them in that transition. That's going to be really of benefit for them. So it's a good thing to ask them. And if you have the facility of doing that, you know, in your transaction, as we said, you know, why are you selling? Are you retiring? If you're retiring, do you have enough funds that you could help that person through seller financing and make it, you know, great for both of you, where you get the part, maybe some money ahead of time that you will want, maybe for a big trip or something like that, or big whatever it is, and then in your life, and then leaving them that with that chance of slowly paying you back. That would be a great way to do those transactions as well. Then if you want to improve the attractiveness, you know, make your practice more attractive, we talked about all these wonderful things that you can add. We didn't talk about location. If you were in a situation where you had more than that year so that you can grow and make your practice attractive, there's some other things that you can consider, you know, like improving your location, moving to a location that might be more attractive for buyers, how to improve your financial performance and profitability, maybe adding equipment. But as I said, don't add it at the, because what happens is when you are adding equipment, during that first year, there's going to be a lot of depreciation, right? So it really decreases and it's really not going to be good for the transaction. So if you want to get like up-to-date, well-maintained, state-of-the-art equipment, modern, efficient, and anything like that that you want, try to do these things in the years before as you get ready for that sale, okay? The same thing with the building your patient base, making sure that you have great staff quality, making sure that your compliance and everything is in place, building up a reputation. All those things are going to take time, right? And if you're going to sell, it's not like you're going to open your practice and sell right away without most of these things if you're looking for a good quality buyer. There's some pitfalls that we would like to avoid. Let's talk about those. And I already told you about that. And I told it to you a few times already, like we did. We had a lot of changes that happened in that last year because we were really not necessarily expecting to sell. After we did that, we were not understanding of the process. We thought, oh, you know, if we get all these things, will make the practice more valuable for somebody. However, the timing was not the necessarily the best one. So yes, we did the right things for making the practice better for somebody, but the timing was within the last year, which should have been earlier than that. So avoid that pitfall. One of the things that people sometimes feel tempted to do is overvaluing their practice, because, you know, we have put so much sweat and tears into the practices that we think is more valuable. And then talking about the goodwill and all this stuff, you know what? If we are not realistic about the value of our practices, if we overprice our practices, we're really not going to sell. So that's why it's so important to have somebody who has done this, who not only has done it, but has done it in your area, in your state, that they know about your neighborhood if necessary, that they will guide you until, you know, these are the realistic expectations. You can still start at a higher price. Nothing tells you that you cannot start at the price that you want. But if you're overvaluing your practice, then you will probably, you know, send away some people even before they come to talk to you, because there might be experts in doing this and they would have no interest. The other thing is that because we're so busy selling the practice, we might just like neglect the practice, like taking care of the important things in the practice the same way that you would want to take care of. Because we're selling the practice doesn't mean that we don't want to take care of our patients in the same way. We don't want to decrease our performance. It's very important you keep your performance very high, the same way or even better, because you want them to get a good clinic from you. You want for them to have in good faith. You want to give them the best that you can give them to your buyers, right? So don't neglect the practice during the sale process. Don't commit that mistake. Take care of it. You know, it's going to be a little bit extra work, but you should do it. You should do it in good faith. You should stay in a good relationship with your buyers, because you never know what where life takes you, right? And it's always good to be good. The other thing is that, you know, not planning ahead, that was a pitfall that we had there. And but you can also not plan ahead by not having all the documentation, as I told you. So if you have all the process in place and everything ready in terms of your documentation, you've planned for it, then it's much easier, especially during that due diligence process. The other thing is, like, don't ignore your legal and financial advisors. That's why you've hired them. And if you haven't done a good job at hiring them, that's a different problem, but they should be there to assist you with the sale. Listen to them. Take advantage of them. And as I said, if you're somebody who doesn't really like to negotiate, they will be there for you. So pay attention to what they say. Don't ignore them. The other thing is that when we're selling, right? So that means that we're going to have to pay taxes on that. So take that into consideration. Don't forget that you will have to pay tax over your sale, depending on your tax bracket and however the transaction was done, and depending on the type of financial structure you have. So make sure that you have taken that into consideration so that you don't deal with maybe some unexpected costs, okay? The other thing is that in my case, very fortunate, I had people come, I had people who knew this, and it was very relatively easy for us to find a buyer in our market. But if you're somebody who's not so sure and you don't do adequate marketing, you might not get the buyer that you want, right? If you don't have these relationships that we were fortunate to have, and you really want to rely, that's all you can do, rely on marketing. If you don't put, you know, the appropriate effort there and go through your broker, they will tell you, get a broker. That's going to be a great way if you know people who are buying other practices, go and talk to them. But make sure that the marketing aspect is there one way or another. The other thing is that I mentioned some different exit strategies. As I said, selling the practice is not the only exit strategy. So before doing any sale, just consider the other opportunities, especially if you're in a position where it could be transferred to a nonprofit, for example, or transferred to somebody that you know, and be even a seller's financer. That would be awesome. for some other, transaction other than just selling your practice. Something very important that you have to address is really your staff, and ignoring your staff and your patients' concerns, obviously, but your staff who has been with you for a very long time, don't ignore them. Make them understanding of what's happening, communicate with them, answer any concerns. In our case, we did as much as we could with that. We negotiated great things for our staff. We do have to say that the way that the company transitioned was in a way that was not supportive of salaries that we had and contracts that we had, even though they were meant to be continued. So those priorities changed with change in their management and the way of operating. So we have to remember that even though we're communicating clearly with our staff with what we know from our point of view, they have to also understand that at the end of the day, once a transaction happens, we're not owners anymore. And if it's a great transition and they're doing great afterwards, that's awesome. If there are changes that happen with that, at that point, as a seller, after you've negotiated and everything that you have on paper is on paper, and anything after that, you have no control. But it's important that you really, really talk to your staff during that process. The other thing is that, sometimes we feel like, oh, if I don't get this buyer, I'm not going to get another buyer. I have to sell to them. And I maybe just like, oh, don't worry, let's just skip through this so that we can just sell to them. If you rush the sale, then you might not get the best terms or even the best outcome. So rushing the sale will be something that you might regret if you fail, especially if you fail to take care of something that was very important. So always involve your accountant, your financial advisors, your attorneys, and make sure that everything goes smoothly. Well, that's been some review of things that you should ask yourself about your readiness for selling. I've given you important calculations and documentation for a sale and important questions to ask the buyer, how to get your practice ready, how to get your personal ready. And if this is a topic that interests you, you can always contact us. So let us know what you think of this episode. In our experience, we did have a successful sale. We sold it for more than what we wanted. We went to negotiate for a salary where I stayed, and I made more than they offered in terms of vacation. Time was very important for us. We negotiated the hours worked regularly. We negotiated the salary. We negotiated a lot of things that were approved at that time, and that would not have happened first without the coaching, the knowledge, and the desire. So, and planning for it. So I invite you that if you're going to sell your practice, take a look at these things. And also, once again, give us a call. You can reach us through the social media, maxallure.com, MaxAllure. And we'll see you then next time. Have a great time. And that was it for today. I hope that you learned some about the process of selling your medical practice. I've done it. You've heard it. And I hope that you learned some about it. Please visit our website, maxallure.com, MaxAllure, for further details about how to hook up with us and be part of our Maxallure Mastermind. Please share this podcast with others. Give us 5 stars, subscribe, and we'll see you next week. See you later. Thanks. Bye.
Please remember that Design is not providing specific financial, medical, or career advice. Our only intent is to stimulate your appetite for growth by sharing our experience and those of our speakers, coaches, and guests. Your personal growth and success will be unique to your circumstances and your hard work. We sincerely hope you enjoy the show and look forward to seeing you next week.